Hello and welcome back to Joe's Art History Podcast, a podcast that celebrates all things art historical with me, your host and resident art historian, Joe McLaughlin. Hello and welcome back, and this week it is episode 63. We are absolutely flying through them now, and we are at the halfway point for season 3, which is very, very exciting. And this week I have an incredible episode for you all about the British landscape painter Fred Cumming. Now, Fred Cumming was a Royal Academician and devoted his life to expressing the fleeting impressions of his surroundings, often painting the south coast of England, particularly around Hastings and Camber and Rye. And his work is really about the responses to the moods and the atmospheres generated by the landscapes, still lifes, or interiors at times that he is looking and living within. And to tell you all about Fred, we have an incredible guest on today, and that is Emma Houghton, who is not only an artist herself, but a complete Fred Cumming enthusiast. And this conversation was so wonderful for lots and lots of reasons. One, I actually didn't really know a lot about Fred Cumming, and actually I admit myself in the recording on several occasions that normally this type of landscape I would very much skip over and really wouldn't give it very much attention. But Emma's passion and love of Fred's work is too engaging not to completely capture your imagination and fall in love with Fred's work. So I want to thank Emma for just being so passionate about Fred's work and really allowing me to check my own bias in terms of art that I do and do not engage with. And yeah, I hope that you yourself will enjoy learning all about Fred. So without further ado, please sit back and relax as Emma and I discuss the wonderful works of Fred Cumming. Before I hit record, I said to you, and I feel like I say this to everybody, and I'm sort of like reassessing how much I actually know about art, that I had no idea about Fred Cumming, who we're going to speak about. And so first and foremost, thank you. He's someone that I don't ever think would have been put on my radar. And I think a lot of that is due to the type of art that I'm interested in. And as I said to you before we hit record, the type of art that I have sort of in my own sort of prejudice pegged in a way where I think, oh no, that's not for me. And I think researching for this episode personally, it's shown me that you cannot pigeonhole what you like in art. It's really important to be open-minded and just run at things and see what happens. And I think this has been a lovely reminder of that. No, I think I'm a very open-minded person about art and I will have a go at anything. But for some reason, landscape painters, contemporary landscape painters.
So do you get a feeling that it's quite bland landscape painting?
If I'm being very, very honest, and you can have a go at me here and people listening at home can as well, I worry that I have pegged it as Because when you visit any seaside town in Britain, what can you buy? It's like local landscape.
Coastal views.
Yes. Yeah. So they're 10 a penny at the coast. And not all of them are good. And I think I've just very much pegged it as that, which is such a shame. And really sort of just made an assumption that that's what that would be. And it's not really for me. Because it is a very traditional art form, isn't it? And when I was thinking about it and reading about Fred, I was like, but there's such a huge tradition of landscape painting in Britain. And actually some of our best and well-known
phenomenal painting. Yeah, exactly.
Turner, for example.
Constable.
Constable as well. Landscape painter.
Yeah.
And known globally and celebrated for it. So actually, I think it's more of it's made me check my narrow-mindedness, perhaps, on what I look at, which is great as well, because then it opens up this whole other realm. And I think that's exactly what I've found with Fred, and I've really loved
it's really interesting because it's sort of when I hoover up anything I can find about him, so I'm trying to read as much as possible, articles or books or whatever, and what seems to come through is that certainly in his early career he was faced with that same challenge So he was almost not dismissed, but because he was painting in the 60s and he was painting when you got all of this sort of vibrancy of, you'd say contemporary, we say contemporary for nowadays, but you know, all that modern painting styles, that wasn't for him. He was trying to find his own form and his own sort of methods and almost tonalism way in which he paints. And it's interesting you say you didn't know Fred, and a lot of people in Britain don't know Fred, but if you're a tonalist painter and you like the tonalists, even in America, you know and love Fred, because
Really?
he's an absolute master. It's beautiful. His use of color and how he kind of juxtaposes something which is opposite on a color wheel, but it works beautifully. Whereas, you know, you would normally see something which is a graduation of tone or of color or of contrast. Oh, wow. It absolutely blows me away. And I think when I contacted you originally, it was sort of, I've got to talk to you about Fred because I see his work and it makes me cry. It just hits me like some sort of, you know, like when you're driving and you see a break in the clouds and the sun's coming over a hill. And you know, when you just think, I've got to stop the car and take a photo, or I've got to stop and sort of enjoy this because it hits you in the heart. That's Fred's paintings for me. And it doesn't matter how many times you look at it, you sort of, I've got one here I keep staring at. But it's, you see something new. And I haven't got the painting in front of me. I've got a print, sometimes even a printout from a computer, and I'm astonished by it.
I think that's a great point, because I think anyone that's an artist or knows anything about art, like a reproduction can never do the real thing justice. Yes, okay, it will give you a great example, particularly now with photography and, you know, editing and all sorts of things like that, but it misses the essence and the heart of it. The soul of it is not captured unless you're standing right in front of it. You can get a sense of it, but I so understand what you mean by looking at Fred's work. But I realize we've like sort of like rambled straight into this conversation, and our listeners might be like, who on earth is Fred? Like, could you give us a little bit of background on who Fred was, what he did, where he was active? So
So Fred Cumming, a British landscape painter, was working until he died last year, unfortunately. And I saw it in, I think it must have been obituary in one of the broadsheets. I woke up and it was there, and I was like, oh my God. And just like, one of those that, for me, a national treasure that I thought would go on and on, and obviously not, but so prolific, and painted not only for his own experimental enjoyment, but it was to pay the bills. And actually, those paintings he was doing to pay the bills, he loved doing as much as he did the other ones. Everything he had around him was just through the sheer enjoyment of where he lived, where he was painting. He often would paint the same scene over and over and over again. And he did that, because he loved where the land meets the sky. You know, that was what really hit him, made him really, really get the sense of atmosphere and light on the coast, based down on the south coast. Hive painted canvas sands over and over and over again, and he would do that so that he didn't have to think about what he was painting. He could only really absorb his time and his thoughts and his energy and his creativity into color and tone. So he would almost muscle memory the view that was in front of him, because he's done it so many times. And there would be this massive expanse of, you were saying about sort of, you know, when you go down to the coast and you see all of these paintings of the sea or the coast, and, you know, and there is a little bit of formula around there, isn't there? You know, I think we can admit to that. But with Fred, it was sort of his use of his preferred palette that just hit the doming of the sky, the science of light, which I find fascinating. So, you know, I paint, and I'm nowhere near Fred's quality at all, but I paint because of the science of it. I paint because it's like, how can you actually replicate through human hands what is out there in light? And actually, it can help you by understanding spectrums, by understanding how light works, how it reflects, how it changes when it hits an object. And that's how Fred painted. He did so many of the interior of his studio and looking out through the window. And you could see different warm temperatures and cool temperatures of the same color, but you knew it was inside and outside. I could talk for hours about his skills. Incredible, incredible guy.
I think that's so beautifully put. And actually, it's reminded me of, we were chatting about it just very, very briefly. There's a fabulous video. So he was a Royal Academician. So for people that don't know what that is, he was a member of the Royal Academy of Arts. So you might see Fred Cumming RA. That means Royal Academician. And the RA in, I think, 2020 did a video series called Portrait of an Artist. And I'll leave a link to it in the show notes below because it's 10 minutes. And it's Fred speaking. And you don't really see Fred until right at the end. But he, and it's so funny when you were chatting there about the things that he loved, because I've gotten block capitals in my big bit of paper where I've been taking notes and things that I wanted to say is loved being an artist, loved painting, loved the landscape, loved colour. And I think you really get a sense of that in this voiceover, this beautiful, beautiful 10-minute long video. And I would thoroughly encourage everyone listening to give this a listen. And it's so visually beautiful and put together as well. And what you were saying there about looking, there was a fabulous quote that I'm going to play. So it's about 60 seconds long. And I flagged it because when I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's lovely. And he was such a talented, oh my God,
such a poet. How he phrases his words in written and in speaking, you can truly visualize through words. You know, he's painting with those words, not just through his colors that he uses. And the way that he talks on this clip, and I've got two DVDs that I think you can still get from Jackson's Art. So 28 quid, honestly, go and just play them if you're interested in his work. But he was a teacher in the early part of his career, just to help make ends meet, and he loved teaching, absolutely loved it, and it comes over so clearly that he just wants to share his knowledge, his generosity with that knowledge of how he achieves his methods, his techniques, his palette. It's a gift.
It's beautiful. Okay, so I'm going to play a short clip on his thoughts on looking and seeing.
To begin with, the sheer volume and complexity of visual experience is overwhelming. The eye scarcely knows where to begin, so the tendency is just to copy, and this is valuable, like learning a vocabulary before learning to speak. Yet it's astonishing how little we really take in of what we see, and how little we understand form and structure until we attempt to commit them to paper. The uneducated eye can judge distances, find and avoid objects, do all these things which we need to survive. But the artists are in another business altogether.
So there we are. I think it's fabulous. I think to speak about viewing, just looking at something like that, it really made me think. He's so right. You don't ever really stop to think about the complexity of what you're viewing until you put pen to paper. And I'm not an artist.
Well, he went to art school at 14. Mm-hmm. It was a Sidcup art school. And throughout his career, he continues to, you know, the importance of observation and drawing and learning your craft by translating what you see through something that you've drawn before you can actually then introduce colour, I think is a really valuable lesson for a lot of artists.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think actually from that clip, because it was when you first wrote me a few weeks back, I watched this instantly just to get a sense of who he was. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is the video that I was like, yeah, we have to talk about him. He's really special. And going back to listen to it today, this part really stood out. Because I think it just spoke to me. And I think there's several points in this video where he just has very simple observations, but they're actually quite prolific in being like, oh, actually, yeah, you're so right. Like what I'm trying to say is, from that clip, it's really held the mirror up in terms of, why don't I rate landscape painting personally? Mm. I think this is the moment where I was like, oh, actually, yes, I really should appreciate the form and the time taken to consider the layout, the colour, composition, atmosphere, even not just within Fred's work, but even in small coastal town paintings, yeah, okay, they might not be the most exciting, but there's time and effort and skill there, which, yeah, it was sort of the wake up call moment, I think, for me, in looking at these works and really looking at them and actually taking what he said there and appreciating it.
And for me, I think the difference between, so going back to what you just said, it was probably the landscape painters that you need to sort of rethink, that there's so many that I think you will get equally good emotional responses to. You just need to hunt them out amongst quite a lot that are out there. And for me, the difference with Fred is that he would go and he would do a lot of plein air work. He would take a lot of sketches. He wrote almost poetic notes against what the color would be. He would describe it as the color of a slug's underbelly, or it would be something that's slaty gray, or, you know, very visual, so that he was able to go away and make that mix up when he came back to it. And then from those sketches, he would then go back into his studio. And for him, painting from memory and an emotion is what has delivered the beauty and the evocative images that we see in his paintings, because he's remembered how he felt. He's remembered not just what he observed, and he's not copying what he's observed. He's putting almost a spiritual sort of layer into it that's part of him, and how he evoked that sense of place whilst he was there. It's just wonderful. And the same scene that he would have with a slight change of colour palette, you know instantly it's sunrise, sunset, noon. And it's exactly the same. Same blues, same purples, but the temperature's different. So that it's obvious that it's the time of day that's there. Yeah. It's just wonderful. And a little mark that just scumbled a vapour trail of all of the planes that would go over, probably going to Gatwick, to and fro, flying. You know, and he thought that was wonderful, and he painted them.
Well, that's it. And actually, that's something that I've got here as my own thought. He sort of celebrates the magnificence in what might to some seem mundane, as you say.
Absolutely.
Sails in the sky, that, you know, couples walking on the beach with their dog or their children. That's a scene you see over and over again. But he loved it, and he celebrated it, and he sort of elevated, I don't know, these just very normal moments and scenes, but in such a powerful, beautiful way through his mastery of light and colour. And you mentioning that the sky and the sort of vapour trails there, that's I gave you the very difficult job of finding three works that we could use as sort of springboards in the conversation. And that's what you've just said there reminds me of one of the works that you have sent to me, which is called Camber Sands, which is on the coast, and it's this beautiful, beautiful coastal beach. And that's my favourite thing about this painting, is that you can see these vapour trails, these fleeting moments of existence, and he's just celebrating it. And I just think it's beautiful. It's lovely.
The way that he has, just with what looks like a simple mark, you know it's a vapour trail, because it's going off into the distance. The perspective on it is incredible. You know that there's one that's more recent than the others, because he's got staccato impasto there, which is just dotting at the end of the vapor trail. And it's just an impression of it. You know, it's sort of, but the brain knows. The brain is clever enough to make the connection of what he's trying to sort of suggest there. And the way that he uses the figures is because you could have a great expanse here of the landscape, and the figures anchor and draw the eye and give you that sense of scale.
Yeah.
And that's how clever it is.
It's fabulous. And even actually now looking at it again, the sort of the figure, the tall figure, I'm going to say male figure, that's just what I think it is. You can see that it's windy, because if you look at the shirt, it's sort of billowing backwards, but it's so...
And the sun's shining off the back of it.
Yeah, and it's
but there's no change in that color, but you know from everything else around it which direction the sun's coming down and how it's catching the back of that shirt. It's just absolutely incredible. You go from, the more you look at it, blows me away. So they're standing in a pool of ultramarine blue, which is next to orange, and that orange is giving, and the orange sand probably from Sienna is giving it that shimmer, which is making it stand out, because it's got that cleverness with the complement on the color wheel. You then go to a cooler lavender behind, almost pink. the dashes of turquoise right at the foreground that until you start hunting for it, and when you see it, I can't not see it, and I see it everywhere. It's dancing around the sand in the front, which breaks up that mass of lemon yellow. Incredible.
It's such a beautiful, beautiful work. And again, something that had I not, like, I think had I been shown this before I did a little bit of I would have been like, yeah, it's all right. But actually to sit with it for a while, and even as I've just said to you, like gone back to it while we're talking, you know, I've been looking at this work all day. I've now brought it back up onto our screen and I'm like, oh my God, I've just spotted something else that I really love. And it's the shark, or it's actually what it looks like is he's trying to capture that wonderful British seaside thing where it's exceptionally cloudy and you get sort of breaks in the cloud of the sun. Yeah, I think it's beautiful and something that I would not normally give the time of day to. So yeah, I'm being exceptionally honest here. Because I think, yeah, it's beautiful. And anyone that's listening, I would thoroughly recommend have a look on my Instagram. That's where I'll share these images. And also check out Fred's website as well, because there's hundreds of beautiful, beautiful images. And it's very different to the other painting that you've selected on Camber Sands. And this one's called Sunset. And this to me, I think had you shown me it and said, what artist is this? I would probably have guessed Monet. Or an impressionist, because it's so, the use of color is so impressionistic. Like I would have pegged my money on being like, yes, that's probably an early Monet. What was it about this work that you wanted, that attracted it to you?
I think it was to demonstrate the difference of, so you've got the same scene, different time of day. You've got it at sunset. And again, this is one that lots of people, when they look at art, say, oh, I love the colours. And okay, you know, it's, yes, you can love the colours, and I do love the colours. But why do I? It is the fact that you've got the moodiness of twilight as it's coming down. And I know that because of the way that you've still got blue that you can see up there in the top left. And as you go further down, it's getting more and more, it's getting darker, it's getting desaturated, it's then turning to purples. You've got the sunset, which is using oranges and lemon, but it's not what you would traditionally, lots of artists when they do a sunset kind of do, oh, red, orange, yellow, and it's quite vibrant. This is subtle. This is wonderful because it's blended. It is tonalism at its best. Until you actually then go down and you think, oh, that's not a cloud. That's a silhouette of a hill on the other side of the cove that the sun sets behind. So you've got the lightest light against the darkest dark, which is starting to sort of come through and protrude. And then you think, okay, my eye's going to follow that yellow down and it's going to see the reflection in the sea, which is beautiful. Oh, hello. There's some figures there walking the dogs. But they're so tiny, and those dots, I didn't see them until I'd had a look at that. I'm interested in this, so I'm going to start looking a little bit more. Oh, I really, have you seen the moon? So the moon is just peeking behind the cloud.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, you got it.
Oh my gosh, so it is.
But you didn't see that because that's not as bright as the sun behind. But because I'm now interested in those small dots, and I've gone to the zigzag of what's happening in the clouds, that small zigzag of the purple has gone up to a bigger mark, which is white against the dark blue of that top cloud, which is pointing towards where the moon is. I then see the moon. So the more you look at this, the more that you discover. It's extraordinary.
It's unbelievable. And I think it just shows you how much of a master he was at his craft. Like, he just knew how to really push something. And just with the subtlest mark, you know what it is. Like the people on the beach walking with the dogs, that could very easily be mistaken for like a small rock formation or something if you just very quickly look at this.
And you know there's two. So at first you think there's one, and then there's two because there's a little denim shirt behind that. That first one at the front, little dash of cobalt blue, assuming it's a denim shirt.
Oh, it's fab. It's honestly, it's so beautiful. And again, as you see, it's exactly the same scene, which I didn't realise. I knew it was the same beach, but I wouldn't have thought it was the same.
He's probably looking in the other direction, to be honest.
Maybe, but
yeah.
Just.
But I'll take it.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful.
And Fred was known, like he's known as a landscape painter, but I did read very, very briefly. He did lots of other things as well. Like he was a
Still life and interiors, and there's one of Stephen Hawking's that he did a few landscape, sorry, a few portraits.
Yes, I had seen that just because he's got his estate have an Instagram account. It was Fred's Instagram. And this was interesting because I was like, when I started researching, I was like, well, okay, it was an RA, Royal Academician. Like there'll be a certain group of people that know him. He's got nearly 12,000 followers on Instagram. So he's obviously there's a appreciation and a following. And the Stephen Hawking's, there was a great video on Instagram about that portrait. It's a fabulous portrait. And it's Stephen Hawking's daughter that talks in it. And he essentially she says it was one of Dad's favorites because although it shows him as a disabled person, it shows him as a person. He's got this very cheeky grin, and Fred could capture that. He could capture the essence and atmosphere and vibe of people. And I think that sort of follows through into his landscape. He just sort of captures the moment beautifully in everything.
He's interested. He's interested in what he's looking at, and he's interested in who he's talking to, and he's interested in how his creativity can then allow others to feel what he sees.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Oh.
Do I remortgage to buy a painting? This is the question.
Oh.
No.
Do you have a painting or anything of Fred, or did you ever meet him?
It was one of those things that I was like, yeah, I will. Of course I will. I'll do that. And yeah, I just, I definitely should have. He used to open his studio, well, by all accounts, visitors used to pop in, and if he was there, he would welcome them. He had a couple of secret ones for when he really wanted to go and paint and sort of focus, but he had these little studios dotted all over. We call them little sheds, I think.
He just comes across as someone who loved life and loved people. And as we said, loved being an artist. And you get that from even the obituaries when I was reading them. Everyone was so devastated, but also so proud to have known a man like him and his generosity in terms of being a friend and a father and a painter, a teacher. He seems so special, and I'm so sad that I didn't know of him when he was alive because it's something that I probably would have got in my car and gone because he was such a character as well, and you can see that when he's being interviewed.
Yeah, he'd have his easel, and on the DVDs you see him painting outside on his beloved sands all the time, and it's all kind of fixed to stop the wind blowing it away, and he's got this massive rag, and he's painting something, he doesn't like it, so he just rags it all off, and I'm sitting there thinking, no, because that was beautiful, but he's got rid of it, but he still retained the ghost of what was there before, so he's able to use some of that for his. The way to make it, his colour's going to work with the transparencies of the next one that he's going to put on top. But he wouldn't have liked the composition. So maybe there was too many people in there and too many dogs. So scrub them all out and away you go again. It's just such a character.
In the RA video, he mentions that he is surrounded by works all the time in various stages of completion, and he loves that. And he doesn't have a set way of working, so to speak. He can start something, put it down for months and months, work on lots of other things, and then when he goes back to the one he was working on to begin with, he'll find that actually what he's been working on will now completely inform where he takes the previous work. And I love that there's an open-mindedness and a sense of riding the wave, no pun intended, speaking as a coastal painter, a landscape painter. Yeah, he went with a gut feeling, and I think that's what's so special about it. And you can really see that, like everything was a feeling. And I love that. I really love that. I think that's very special.
It's rare to be able to convey that in the paintings that you're doing is phenomenal. And I think the third one I sent you, which is Street Traders, is one that was new to me actually. So I was doing some, I've had a lovely time these last few weeks, just doing, completely absorbing myself in Fred and doing as much research as possible. But Street Traders was absolutely new to me. And again, this is very, very different because I'm used to his landscapes. And here, what we've got is a painting of a market stall. With lots of energy. I think that's the only word I can use. So whereas with the previous ones, we've got lots of blending and evocative style, this is full of energy. You've got purples next, which is almost out of the tube and is rare. They're that saturated. They're so purple. The blue is so blue, which is framing the open side of a market store that's got very clearly man-made electricity, which is the lighting. And you know it is because it's so pale, it's iridescent. And he's got that vibrancy. And it's the way that the yellow is, again, shimmering against the purple is making it just absolutely sing out. So for me, I look at this, I think it's probably raining. It's certainly cold.
Interesting.
I get the rain because of there's darker notes around it. And next to those darker notes, you see the white where the pedestrians are. I think they're puddles.
So now that you've said that, I can see where you're, yeah.
It might not be, but to me, this is November. This is a market store that's selling goodness knows what, but I see tomatoes, I can see broccoli, I can see lettuce, I think I see a carrot. There are two figures serving behind the stall. She doesn't look very happy, but I don't think that's intentional, but maybe she's cold, it's the end of the day. You've got the commuters that are walking past and not stopping to buy, with the exception of one figure who's paying the figure on the left. But outside of that, I think if we're looking at his use of colour here, I know where the beginning of the stall is, and I know where the end of it is, not just because of the line that is used, but because of how he's used temperature. So where you've got that electric light, which is so, so vibrant, you've got a cool blue or a cool purple. And the further away you get from that, it's warming up around the edges. Just wonderful. I could stare at this one forever. I like the little child as well that I've just spotted. Yeah. Not sure if it was a dog, but it's definitely a child. Maybe with a backpack on. But there's nothing to these people, is there? It's the same. It's just marks in one colour.
Yeah, exactly. It's just very loose, but very precise brush marks. And what I actually find very interesting is the people in the stall, their faces look really detailed, but they're really, really not. They're just marks. But you can see particularly the figure on the right hand side in the stall, you can see his nose, his sort of eyes, a sort of frown, almost sort of looking out,
scowl, isn't there?
It's a bit sort of like, oh come on, end of the day, hurry up.
Definitely.
And then the figure to the left is looking down, sort of counting cash or something. He's definitely like engaged in an activity.
I think he's weighing something out. I think they're scales.
Ah.
But again, it's sort of, you will see something different to me because that, and that's the beauty of it, because none of it is defined. It is impressionism. And, you know, that's what he was very, very attracted to at the beginning of his career. And he's found his own way in that for me. The way that he's made little impressions of something for you and your brain to decide what you want it to be and to take enjoyment from it.
It's fantastic. And this is, of the three, this is my favorite because there's so much to it. There's so much you can take from the color, from the composition, from the debate of what do you think they're selling, what time of day you think it is. But when before we hit record, I said to you, this I love because I feel like everyone can look at this and instantly be transported to this cold early evening in the winter where you're sort of bundled up and you're on your way home and, you know, you have to get some shopping. It's just wonderful. I think it's...
You can almost smell the veg, can't you? It entices you in with the way that it funnels in towards the open of the store.
It's just so fantastic. And a lovely contrast to his landscapes because he's not this one trick pony. He is someone that is genuinely exceptionally talented. And actually, that's something else I've got here. Because as you said previously, he went to art school at 14. And I read that he was given a set of paints when he was 12 or 13 that he used on bits of cardboard. So I feel like he was born to do this. There was just something about where he was brought up and his love of observation. Because really, he's a master of observation and sort of celebrating that. Yeah, oh my God, the colours in this, I just think are fantastic.
But this is from 1980.
1980.
And you would look at that, and that's something that you would expect a talented painter to be producing now. You know, what we're talking sort of 40 odd years ago. And it's so contemporary, it blows my mind.
It's fantastic. And actually, now that you've said contemporary, it's reminded me that when I was looking at this and I was reading about Fred and it said contemporary landscape painter or contemporary painter. And I was like, would I class Fred as a contemporary painter? And I absolutely, of course I would, but it made me sort of again check myself and be like, oh, why do I not think I would brand him as a contemporary painter? Because he is. But I think I associate the word contemporary with the
genre.
Yeah, like the very sort of punchy, you know, like the YBAs and things like that, people that are out to sort of shock and send a message. And actually, contemporary art can be lots of things. Contemporary art is people who are making now, and it can be lots of different subjects. But it was interesting that I was like, oh, that's weird that that's what I associate the word contemporary with.
Mm.
When someone says contemporary art, I'll be like, oh, yes, like Tracy Emin and da 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 da. So yeah, again, it's been a very interesting, like, holding the mirror up to my own ways of thinking.
It's an interesting thing for us all to challenge ourselves on, isn't it? So I've waxed lyrical about Fred, but I will also be close-minded about other forms of art and other artists in a different way. And I think there's a lesson there for all of us in terms of, yes, understand what it is that you like and why you like it, but push your boundaries to try and understand other forms, a bit like when you know, you should always read 3 newspapers, not just the one that you agree with, so that you actually kind of understand a different point of view and reinforce the way that you think. I think it would open everybody's minds up to study different ways of art. And that's something that there's so much art out there. I personally have gone down the route of the stuff that I'm immediately attracted to, but I do need to challenge myself and I do need to sort of look at other stuff. And listeners may shoot me for this. Picasso was one of those. It was one that I never really could feel connected to until I went to see it. And that's probably got a lot to do with it. So if you see it in person, then you really sort of, you can feel the weight of it and you can feel exactly why it is that he's revered as he is. But until I went there, it wasn't something that was for me.
So I had exactly the same thing with Van Gogh, and I didn't understand why everyone would bang on about him. I really didn't get it until there was an Impressionist exhibition when I was studying my undergrad in Glasgow. But the exhibition was in Edinburgh, and one of my lecturers was the co-curator, so she took us all through to see it. And it was one of Van Gogh's cypress trees paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood in front of it and I was like, oh my God, I totally get it. Because the energy at which he is applying...
It's as if it's moving, isn't it?
It's wild. And like, I went to the shop at the end and I picked up the catalogue and I flicked through to see if it was in there. And I looked at the catalogue and I was like, oh, that's not what I saw in that exhibition. And that's when the dots, it all kind of clicked that you need to see it in person sometimes to really appreciate the full sort of weight that a piece carries. And that's something I'm really going to try and do, is try and hunt out where I can find a Fred Cumming and see it in real life.
I know. That's definitely something that I'm planning on doing this year. Definitely. There's a couple of galleries down south. One in Rye, one in Wimbledon.
Oh, I'm very close to Wimbledon, actually.
Mm.
Okay.
I don't know whether or not they're always on show, but I'm sure. I think if you contact them and say you'd like to go and have a look, I'm sure they will.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably... we're going to be inundated with people wanting to go and see them. But why not? Because we love Fred. The more people who see them, the better.
Absolutely. And hey, listen, I used to work in a commercial gallery and I loved when people came in and were like, oh, do you have a work by this artist? I can't afford it, but I would love to see. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, just come, we'll have a look at the prints. Or actually, we had a viewing room in the back and I was like, I've got some more things here in the back, come see them. It makes the galleries job more interesting as well, instead of sort of answering emails all day. And it allows you to like have a conversation about art, because that's also what these people are there to do.
Yeah, and if you're seeking that artist out in that gallery, then they're pretty keen, aren't they?
Absolutely. And the fact, yeah, I think if you walked in and said, got any Fred Cumming, they'd be like, oh, absolutely, let's have a look. They would love it. But you said he's got quite a following in America as well.
Yes. Now, that may well be because of I'm in groups of like-minded painters and like-minded, you know, who enjoy this style. So whether or not it's a big fish in a little pond, I'm not entirely sure, but certainly...
You'll need to share the episode with them once it's out.
I know. I'm like, look, I'm spreading the word with Fred.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I've got a few questions actually that I've been thinking about while I was researching. And essentially the top one is, I feel Fred is very overlooked Do you feel that way within art history, within contemporary art? Is it a case of him being overlooked, or do you think if you're in the certain circles, you'll come across him? What's your...
I think very much the latter. I think it took him a while to earn a living from his art, and then it's quite rare to see one that's for sale. So he would be prolific and sell, and it was in much in demand. So I think it's one of those that, cult is the wrong word, but is the artist that if you know him and you love him, then he's huge in that group. But I do think that there's an awful lot that he can teach others who aren't aware of him about his composition and about how to mix colour, about how to convey emotions and a sense of place. More people should just look at what he's done and dissect it, pull it apart, pick it apart, and your own painting will improve as a result.
Oh, I love that. It's so poetic. I can see that Fred has rubbed off on you in both.
I've been absorbed. I think I've been inspired by his spirit over the last few weeks.
But honestly, like, there's been about 4 or 5 times in the recording that you've said things, and I'm like, my God, she's so like poetic and like eloquent in her point. Oh gosh, absolutely. I have absolutely loved speaking to you about Fred, and thank you again for banging the drum for his art practice. And people that are listening, please, please, please go away, have a look, follow the link in the show notes below to that amazing video that the RA put together. Is there anything else you would like to say about Fred? I know like you've had an hour to like chat about him, but is there anything that you feel like, oh gosh, I haven't said this, or this is a really important thing if people want to look here or to like learn more? Is there anything that you, the floor is yours?
I guess in summary, I've joked about it a bit, but I want to spread the word about Fred. I want as many people to look at him and know him. And that's primarily because I believe he's extremely accessible. So as a character and as a personality, as a teacher, as a painter, everything about him is accessible to people who are into art, not into art, who appreciate things that are beautiful or appreciate going down and walking the dogs on the beach. There's something about what Fred does that is going to touch a wide variety of people, no matter who they are or how they think. I think it should be on the NHS, but definitely be on the curriculum for people to be absorbing more about Fred, and they'll just be happier.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And he's really special. And it's to the point that once this episode's out, I want to send it to his family. I think the estate would appreciate it, and like just banging the drum a little bit, because he's just, oh, he's brilliant. So please, please, please go and enjoy Fred's work.
And if you don't, I'm going to be back in a fortnight doing the same with different paintings.
Emma, it's been amazing chatting to you. Before I let you go, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before. It's not a requirement as a guest, but I end every podcast episode by asking one question. It's quite a mean question. And you can take it as wide or as personal to you as you want. And my question is, why is art important?
That is a big question, isn't it? That is a big question. Let me take a heartbeat on that one. Why is art important? It's going to be important in different ways to different people. So why is art important to me? It's important to me because it was something I was able to do solo. Didn't require... So as a child growing up, friends didn't live nearby. It entertained me. It gave me something that I could do for hours and hours and enjoy it and not feel like I was lonely. So for me, that was really important. And then as I grew up, I understood that it actually, what people paint and how they paint often conveys how they feel. And if you put yourself in their shoes and you're looking at what they're doing and try, and if you know a bit about them, then you can understand more about why they painted it. And I think that psychological connection to the reasons why people feel an urge to be creative, whether or not they're sort of scribbling things on a cave in reindeer blood because they needed to communicate something. It is all about what they're communicating, how they communicate it, why they feel the need to communicate it. So for me, it was an outlet for loneliness. that turned into, actually, this is how I'm going to communicate with the world going forward.
Love it. I absolutely love it. What I love about that question is it's very, everyone's reaction is always like, and then everyone always gives such a beautiful response to it. So thank you. That was really beautiful. Thank you. Emma, before you go, where can people connect with you and find you? Because we haven't even touched on the fact that you're also a painter. You're an artist. So please tell us a bit about where people can connect with you, your work, your practice.
Yeah, you can find me on mhotenart.com. And same for Instagram. That's E-M-H-O-T-E-N. And yeah, come and find me. I do oil painting, which uses a lot of cold wax medium. I endeavor to bring as much of Fred into my work as I possibly can. So my life's work is to try and understand exactly how he did something so that I can then put that same learning into a scene that I've witnessed or I feel. And I'm loving doing that. So I surround myself with lots and lots of paintings, purely by coincidence, actually. I loved reading that Fred does that the same. And I love also reading that people suspected that he spoke to them. So he had a little chat in his studio, because I do that all the time. There's paintings around me that go, I'm too loud, or I'm too dark, or I've got too much blue in me. But you only know that after sort of 2 or 3 weeks of living with these paintings, and they're just chatting away to you. So find me on my website, or find me on Instagram.
Amazing. And I'll leave links to your website and your Instagram in the show notes below.
Wonderful.
Emma, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Loved it.
And there you have it, another episode of Joe's Art History Podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please make sure to like, rate, and subscribe. It does really help in letting other people find us. You can listen to Joe's Art History Podcast on any streaming platform, and you can also watch it in a video format on YouTube. If you would like to support the podcast in any way, I have now released an Amazon wish list, which you can also find in the show notes below. This will allow you to donate in part or purchase in full an art historical text that is of interest to me and that will help in research towards future episodes. And it would be really wonderful if you've listened to quite a lot of these, if you could buy that as a way of marking patronage towards the podcast, that would be brilliant. If you would like to get in touch, please do. It's always lovely to hear from people. You can email me, joesarthistory@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with me via Instagram, which is @joesarthistory, or you can search for my name, Joe McLaughlin, via Instagram, and you will find me there. That's all we have from the podcast this week. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I'll remind you to keep learning, and remember, art is for all. Bye.